We are back for another season preview, this time with Eric Kareen talking about the Toronto Raptors. What's up, Eric?
Not too much. How are you doing, Nate?
Yeah, my intros have gotten shorter and shorter as I've been going through trying to do all 30 teams, so I hope you do not feel slighted in that respect.
Oh, it's I'll get over it. One of many perceived slights that I will I will put onto my shoulders like Kyle Lowry and just, you know, make this the best year ever, thanks to all the haters.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry with some notably slimmer shoulders this year. That seems like the biggest story that's been coming out of camp so far, is just how amazing he looks. I mean, I saw him in person. He didn't play in this game when they played at Golden State in the preseason, but you could tell even with his warm-up on, like, his body fat is down to, like, 5%. He looks unbelievable.
Yeah, he's more or less disappeared over the summer. He's a stocky point guard for most of his career, and that worked for him. He used his rather formidable backside, I guess one could say, to find some position in the post and use his body like that. And he's certainly slimmed down, trimmed down, and we'll see how it affects his play. He certainly had an awesome preseason for the most part, so I mean, that's not the question with Lowry, though. It's how can he hold up throughout a year he's had injury problems throughout his career, and then after the way he sort of broke down after the really incredible start to the season last year, we'll all be sort of watching to see how he maintains his level of play and his health through 82 games as opposed to just 2 months.
Well, yeah, so what happened to him down the end of last year? He started the All-Star game, and I wouldn't say it was undeserved. He was right up there.
He was great, yeah.
On Wall.
You know, it depends who you ask. He really had to carry the offensive burden, the playmaking burden, while DeMar DeRozan was out with his groin injury. His usage rate was way up there for that span, and just, you know, it's not like he was playing way more minutes than he was used to, but those minutes were more high demand. So, you know, fair to say he got worn down. He didn't have any huge injuries, although they tried to rest him throughout the year, and he did battle various injuries, although nothing that completely derailed him at any point. But, you know, that's the best death is just, the season was too long for the load he was carrying, and it's not the first time that's happened. It sort of happened in different ways before. He was carrying a superstar's load for the first half of the year, and you know, he's been a very good NBA player for a very long time, but it was more than he was used to, I would say.
Yeah, and they really, if this team's going to fulfill its aspirations, they need him to be that guy that he was the first half of last year, or maybe DeRozan is going to have to take a big step forward, because once he kind of broke down, this team was getting it done with an amazing offense, and it seemed like then once he just wasn't able to keep it up, that fell apart for him. But I think now it's an interesting idea, right? Is he's slimmed down, he looks amazing in the preseason, but he also just turned 29. He's a short point guard. So he's got that kind of going against him, as you would think. Well, he might even be worse than he was last year. But what do you think? Can he keep it going for an entire year at this type of pace that they need him to?
Look, I don't think he's going to be a top five MVP candidate like he was playing for the first 2 months for an entire season. I just don't think that's really his level. But I do think he can do what he did the previous year, perhaps, which is be very, very, you know, top tier point guard, maybe if he, you know, not in your Paul Westbrook Curry group, but right after that, and keep it and sort of play at that level, and which was an all-star level, even though he didn't get into the all-star game, for, you know, the majority of the season. I don't think he's one of the 10 or 15 best players in the league, but he's probably in that next group if everything goes right. Again, health is the question. He's sort of struggled with various things throughout his career. So, yeah, it's great that he slimmed down and has lost some weight, and he's taking these things more seriously, but you never know for sure that it's actually going to make a difference, especially with injuries. As we all know, you can be as prepared as you want, but sometimes bad things just happen. But you're right. He's the best player on the team, and they need him, if not to be the version of Lowry we saw in November and December, something pretty close.
So the focus has been now on the moves that they made in the offseason. They brought in Damari Carroll, who is finally now addressed their need for a two-way player on the wing that seemingly every team has, but especially the Raptors, since they got smashed by the wings of the Nets and the Wizards in consecutive playoff series. So they've got him in. They let Amir Johnson go. And how is that front court rotation going to shake out now where you've got Carroll? There's some talk of playing small. Patrick Patterson is also in the mix maybe to start. Jonas Valanciunas, Bismack Biyombo. What do you think are some of the combinations that Casey is going to be leaning on this year?
I mean, I think the safe bet is that Patterson starts next to Valanciunas. That lineup wasn't actually very good last year. They were outscored when those two players shared the floor. They had
two below average defenders.
Yeah,
at least last year.
Patterson's like an all right defender, but he's not a good rebounder for his size, which is a problem. I think rebounding is going to be one of the things that haunts them all year. They just don't have the backcourt's pretty good, but you don't really win rebounding battles in the backcourt in the NBA. So I'd be surprised if Patterson doesn't start there, but there's no combination that makes a ton of sense there. I think that's sort of what they lost with Amir, who was so malleable and so adaptable that, as we saw for years here in Toronto, now they're sort of hoping something works, and they've even made noise about going small and playing Damari Carroll at power forward or James Johnson at power forward. And, they're probably going to have to try it because none of the combinations really fills me with confidence. But you could hope for a Luis Scola revival, but this isn't FIBA. I mean, I was down in Mexico City for that tournament, and he can just carry teams there. But he hasn't been that way in the NBA, ever, and he hasn't been at his best at his NBA peak for 2 years now. So we'll see. I like the addition of Biyombo. I think they've lacked a true rim protector for a while. He's going to help, especially given, some of Jonas Valanciunas' weaknesses. It will give them a different look and definitely more rim protection. But I think there's probably going to be searching for the first month for something that works.
Yeah, and Patterson is one of these guys who, not really that much of a post-up threat, kind of a stretch four. You think if you're the other team, he's one of these guys where you say, all right, why don't we'll just go small at the four, and he's not really going to hurt us, and he's going to be a lot slower, and we can guard him at the three-point line just fine. So maybe they do go with Carroll at the four, but he's actually, although he was a power forward in college, is a little thinner than you might think. Actually, I was talking to an executive the other day who pointed out to me that he really is like 210 pounds. So he plays hard, but he may not hold up against some of those matchups. And he got bludgeoned by LeBron, for example.
Yeah,
in the playoffs.
And part of the idea of getting Carroll is so that DeMar DeRozan and Terrence Ross don't have to keep on guarding those bigger wing players. So, it's not ideal. I think it's something they're going to have to try, but it's not what they want to do. I would like to see them try James Johnson, but there's a bunch of questions with him, as always. How much does he freelance on both ends of the floor?
Yeah, I remember when Toronto was in Golden State last year, I asked you about that, like, why doesn't he play more? And basically the answer was that he just does not execute the defensive scheme well enough. And although he does a bunch of nice kind of freelance stuff as well with his energy, the coaches just don't trust him, ultimately, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, I think after last year, what happened with Paul Pierce in the playoffs, he just killed them as a small ball power forward. And they basically said that James Johnson basically said he wasn't ready to play power forward in their schemes. So hopefully they've learned that that's a pretty important thing for them to be ready for. And I think he'll get a look, but I think it's, again, I think it's just going to be Dwayne Casey, unless things go perfectly to start, and they probably won't. They have a lot of road games. But I think Dwayne Casey's going to have to try a few things. And, you know, I like Patterson. I like some of the things that Louis Scola can do. I like James Johnson's versatility and his, certainly his ability to drive. But it's, you know, Jonas Valanciunas is not a player who necessarily fits in with, you know, the quicker, smaller NBA. And so there isn't necessarily a natural fit on the roster for him.
You're talking about at the other front court spot.
Yeah.
And Valanciunas, I don't think that his tools are that bad defensively. He is incredibly long when you see him in person. That I think that's something that people don't necessarily realize about him. Where is he at now defensively? What does he need to improve? Because I think really they're going to be relying on him having let Johnson go now to be someone who can protect the rim and play adequate pick and roll defense.
Yeah, I think last year in training camp they talked about him, you know, working with a running coach and really improving his footwork, and he was going to be out there hedging hard on pick and rolls, and he couldn't do it. So they are making some slight alterations to the roster, the defense, and they will have him hang back and play a more conservative style, which isn't to say he won't be out in pick and rolls, obviously, but they want him in the paint, and he's definitely a fine rim protector. And their improved perimeter defense with both Damari Carroll and Corey Joseph should hopefully limit the number of, you know, just pure blow-bys or just awful pick-and-roll situations, which really represented their biggest flaw last year, perimeter defense.
Yeah, and Lowry, hopefully he'll be better with a little bit less of an offensive load, being in better shape. He used to be a great defender, and he's kind of slipped, so maybe he can get back to that.
I mean, I think that's natural with him taking such a big part of the offensive burden. He's still fine. I don't see him as, you know, he's not an elite defensive point guard, but I think he's okay. I really do think they've improved on the perimeter in terms of defense, because, you know, anybody with eyes could see that the Kyle Lowry, Gravis Vasquez, Lou Williams at court was not formidable enough in that way.
Yeah, so they basically let Amir Johnson go. He signed a 2-year, $24 million deal in Boston with the second year non-guaranteed. So it's only $12 million guaranteed. They signed Corey Joseph for $7 million and Luis Scola basically for $3 million. What, did they make any effort to retain Amir at all? And what do you think of the fact that they kind of let him go? I mean, I would imagine if they had just offered him 2 years, $20 million fully guaranteed, that given what he took in Boston, that's something that he would have thought very seriously about.
Yeah, I think they had other priorities. I mean, there are concerns with his ankles. You know, I felt bad for him watching him the last few years, and he would roll over on those ankles, you know, once a week, basically. So I think they were very hesitant to put any long-term commitment into him, as Boston was. I mean, he could only get the one full guaranteed year, and I think they identified perimeter defense as a huge issue, hence you get the big contract for Carroll and Joseph. You know, whether Joseph warrants that is another question.
What do you think about that?
There's just not enough data to know, you know? Like, I like Corey's game, but it was a smaller, more inconsistent role in San Antonio. I think there's a chance he could blossom with a more defined role and certainly more minutes. But I don't think any of us can know for sure, really. So this is sort of my default answer in the preseason. We'll see, which is, you know, a very sexy pick.
I worry, at least for this year, he may develop, but I worry that he just is pretty unwilling, it seems, to take three-pointers. And I would imagine he's going to be playing with DeRozan a lot, because DeRozan likes to have the ball in his hands, and so he'll have to play off the ball a little bit more, assuming that they're staggering Lowry and DeRozan, which I think they probably will. And he's got to take those open three-pointers,
and he hasn't
really been doing that, you know?
I think that's something he's going to grow into. I wouldn't be that worried about that, but it's just, you know, it sounds vague, but his overall game, it was a lot of commitment for somebody who hasn't had a permanent rotation role yet in the NBA. He went out in and out last year in San Antonio, and, you know, he's a local kid, and that's nice, and he is certainly a savvy ball handler and a pretty intuitive player and has the tools to be a very good defender, but we just don't know. And I don't see how anybody could, you know, be very confident about how this will work out either way.
Yeah, and I also, I wonder who else was willing to offer him quite that much money, especially considering that he has a player option on that last year. Sit with me for a second here, though. I got to do a quick live read for a minute from our friends at SeatGeek. And SeatGeek is the inaugural sponsor of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. They take a very analytical approach to selling you tickets, as we do here on the podcast. They aggregate pretty much every possible source of tickets, so you don't have to look at 8 million different sites worried that you're missing out on the best deal. They bring it all to you. It is an app that you can download in less than a minute. You don't have to deal with any of the BS, like prove that you are not a robot things that you get on a lot of sites, because it's on your phone. They know that you're not a robot. And for a limited time, actually maybe not a limited time, hopefully, because they'll continue to sponsor the podcast, but you can use the CapSpace code, all one word, to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. With NBA season starting, it is a great time to try out this awesome product. All right. Thanks for bearing with me for that interruption. What do you see as the main strengths of this team for this season that they're going to be relying on a night-to-night basis?
Well, I think, I know post-ups aren't always in vogue with the current NBA, but I think, you know, Jonas Valanciunas, DeMar DeRozan, even Kyle Lowry are pretty strong there. I think I'm not sure how the overall offense is going to be, just because I don't know about the bench at all. This last year, their most successful unit by far was the bench, the five-man bench unit. It was Vasquez, Williams, James Johnson, Patrick Patterson, and Tyler Hansbrough. And they ran other second units off the floor with that lineup. And assuming Patterson starts, we're going to see, you know, basically only James Johnson in that role that he was in last year, maybe. So that unit and those players are going to have to gain familiarity with each other. But as I say, I think they should sort of be an average offensive team. And I really do think that the perimeter defense is going to be a lot stronger. If Terrence Ross can ever take a step forward, which, you know, I'm sort of starting to feel about him like I did with Andrea Bargnani, which I know is damning.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and not to say he is Bargnani, but, you know, every year they would come back with, this is why he's going to be better this year. This is why he's going to be better this year. And you know, I'm just going to have to see it at this point, because he's just been plagued by inconsistency and inability.
Yeah, coming off off-season ankle surgery as well.
Yeah, and maybe that helps, you know? The role as the guy coming off the bench, which he sort of, you know, one of the main scorers off the bench, which he sort of expressed a desire for last year at some point, but didn't really work on the team because they didn't have a natural small forward to start next to DeRozan and Lowry. That could help him, and so could guarding more shooting guards as opposed to small forwards or bigger wing players, I should say. I know positions are dead. So maybe that helps them. But again, I'm with Terrence Ross, and it's like, you show me for 2 months at a time and then maybe I'll believe you. But you know, if he does take a step forward on, you know, defending on the perimeter, which I think he has the tools to do. I think this could be a very good defense, especially on the perimeter. And, you know, if Jonas does, if they are able to optimize Jonas Valanciunas as a defender in the paint, then, you know, we've been talking about Dwayne Casey's defensive resume for years here. This is sort of the group that could help him deliver on that.
Yeah, they're icing pick and rolls now this year, which I thought was a step forward, trying to keep side pick and rolls on the side of the floor. It seems like that might fit the personnel a little bit more, especially since they have kind of more of these long guys now, yeah. Carroll included, who can kind of stay with the ball handler on those, bother a shot from behind a little bit. And with now Valanciunas presumably getting the lion's share of the minutes, he is, I think, going to be more effective hanging back, as you talked about. What do you see as the best crunch time lineup for this team 5 minutes to go in the game?
It's a wonderful question. One of the biggest issues over the last few years has been Dwayne Casey's unwillingness, I guess you could say, to play Jonas Valanciunas down the stretch.
He's got to this year, though, right?
I don't think he has a choice. You know, like, you don't have that. You don't have Amir, who was the guy who could sort of fill in and provide, you know, quicker, more fleet defense and just be adaptable in general. I think Jonas is going to have to play. You know, right now I think it'll probably be the starters, him, Patterson, Carroll, Lowry, and DeRozan, as it should be. You should probably be starting your best lineup in most cases. I would not be surprised again at some point if they decided to go with either James Johnson or Carroll at the four, and if it's Carroll, maybe slip Ross in there if he comes together.
If there's no big wing threat on the other team, you know, if they're not playing against the Bulls or against Cleveland or Oklahoma City or something, then maybe you can get away with Ross or DeRozan at the three.
Yeah, and Casey loves his veterans, so I'm sure we'll see a bit of Luis Scola there, although the last few years in Indiana weren't terribly comforting on that front.
All right, let's do just like 20 seconds. I'm going to give you some names of some of the younger guys on the roster. Just give me kind of your impression of where they're at, you know, and how much of the future that they will be. Let's start with Bruno Caboclo.
The cult favorite. I should say before we get into this, they do have their own D-League team now, the questionably named Raptors 905. So that's going to be huge for the way this roster is built. Masai Ujiri, since he came here, said he wanted the bottom third of the roster to be developmentally minded, and now they have four or five players who are, you know, could be spending significant time in the D-League on their roster. I think, you know, they believe in Bruno Caboclo. That's why they took him with the 20th pick. He's still a huge gamble, and he'll be in the D-League for most of the year, I believe. But it's still an investment that they very much believe in. We haven't seen enough of him to know how zappy of an investment that is.
All right. How about Anthony Bennett?
I think, you know, if things go poorly at power forward, which they might, he could definitely play a role this year. I'm sort of partial to his game, even though he hasn't proven a thing in his first 2 years in the NBA. He's just hyper athletic, as you know. He has some ball handling skills. The question really is his defense. They've been pumping his tires as far as his defense goes. I'll need to see more of that to believe it's, you know, functional. But I'd be surprised if he didn't crack his way into or make his way into the rotation at some point this year, if not, you know, very close to the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's just from a mentality standpoint, it's hard to imagine that he's going to get there defensively, but if he can just start hitting his threes, I mean, that's, he just hasn't made any of these jumpers that he's been taking, you know, and he took so many long twos last year in Minnesota. If he backs that out to the 3-point line and then maybe can play a little bit of pick and roll as well. Yeah. He might, you know, all he's got to do is make that jump shot, and then he can be an okay offensive player.
Yeah, he can do it. I've seen him do it. I saw him do it for the national team this year. So, you know, we'll see. But I'm probably higher on Bennett than most people who have watched, or in many cases not watched, his first two NBA seasons are.
Norman Powell.
Sort of one of the more promising players in the second round of the draft, at least, that seems to really have caught on so far. Just, you know, certainly throw down, has the athleticism skills. We'll see about his jump shot. He will also spend some time with the 905, I'm sure. I don't know what to call them. It's like the 905, Dan Tolsman, who's the GM of the team, says he's calling them the five, like Toronto has started to be called the six. It's just an impossible, it's an impossible name to work with. And I'll probably curse them every time I mention them on a podcast or a radio show for deciding to do that. Anyway, I don't think there are minutes for him there right now, but you know, the early returns are good, and I wouldn't be shocked if he finds his way into the rotation this year at some point.
Yeah, if it doesn't work out for Ross, I could actually sort of see it. What I was really impressed by with him in these preseason games has been what he's been able to do off the dribble, and he is a really nice finisher at the basket when he can get there. I always thought he was going to be just sort of pure 3-and-D. Let's see whether he has a jump shot. That's going to determine whether he can get anywhere. You know, he didn't really show that much in terms of ball skills at UCLA. But, yeah, he's been great. That game against the Warriors that I saw, he was finishing over Festus Ezeli inside, no problem. I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from him so far. And maybe, you know, he's someone who could be a nice, cheap find for them for a couple of years.
Yeah, there's a scenario, you know, in which he proves that he's better than Terrence Ross. I'm not saying that's likely. But if Ross continues to do the thing he's sort of done in his first three seasons and tantalize and then just disappear for, you know, weeks at a time, I think Powell definitely seems like he has some tools that will help him, you know, make an impression right away. And he's a, you know, he's a long-term player at UCLA, so he doesn't have that sharp learning curve that he might have otherwise. I bet he finds some minutes this year, and maybe more than that. I'm being conservative, potentially.
Any way that Bebe Noguera gets any rotation minutes this year?
He'll have to stay healthy first.
Yeah.
That's been one of the biggest questions with him. You know, there's always injuries. Could happen. I think he's pretty firmly behind five or six guys in the front court.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're all going to blow up and be disasters. So I'd be surprised.
Yeah, and Daylon Wright, you have to imagine he's probably not going to play that much because they signed Corey Joseph, who is sort of like a slightly more advanced version of what he's doing, it seems like.
Yeah.
Although they are actually pretty close in age because Wright was 23 already.
Yeah, what a world. They do like him, but again, just as you say, like how many, even if Joseph and Lowry are playing together and they would like them to, although that's worked varying levels with Kyle and other point guards in the past, but it doesn't seem like there would be room for all three of them. But again, he's another long, you know, another player with a long college resume, and he has a questionable jump shot, but he's very savvy. He has a very good feel for the game. He has some wonderful point guard skills. I think the plan is to put him in the D League and let him play a whole bunch. And but you know, one injury to Lowry, and he's going to have to be up in with the Raptors. So I think they know that Kyle has to be supported like that because there is that possibility. And I think this is a kid they, you know, they're not betting on him, but they believe in him certainly enough to use on a first round pick. And I think he's part of their he's part of their future.
Yeah, and they passed over some names for him too, Tyus Jones, Bobby Portis, who have looked pretty good so far. All right, so give me a predicted record, best case scenario, and worst case scenario. Worst case, we're not saying like, you know, everybody gets injured, but just kind of disappointing, you know, sort of thing.
I'd probably predict 45 and 37, right around there. I think the Vegas over-under is 46 and seems about right based on their 49 Jekyll and Hyde season last year. So I would predict 45 and 37, you know, best in the conference maybe. Best case, it's the East, and you've got a bunch of these. Is there a team beyond Cleveland anybody really, really believes in? You know, I feel better about Chicago and Washington than I do about the Raptors, but there is a world in which the Raptors won 52, 53 games and finished second in the conference, you know? Like, I think that's on the table. You know, JV, Jonas Valanciunas takes a step forward. Kyle Lowry is close to his peak self for a lot of the year. DeMar DeRozan shows that he can fit in a bit more in a motion and more of a passing oriented offense, which I think we didn't touch on. It's a huge question about this team. They're preaching ball movement, but do they have the players to do that? You know, DeRozan.
Yeah, Valanciunas, DeRozan, those guys
Ross
are not exactly.
Yeah, it's a lot. You're hoping for a lot of players to be able to adapt pretty quickly who in the past haven't necessarily shown that ability. But that's what they're preaching. So again, we'll see. But we saw that a bit 2 years ago, so it's possible that it does happen. And I think that'd be my best case. You know, low 50s, second or third seed, got to the Eastern Conference Final because again, the East. Worst case, you know, Lowry can't stay healthy all year, and the defense isn't as good, the upgrades aren't as meaningful as, you know, I think they will be, and the front office thinks will be. Jonas Valanciunas stalls, Terrence Ross stalls, they win 39, 40 games.
Yeah, I think their floor is a little bit higher than that, absent some injuries. I would say maybe, you know, worst case, 42, 43. I might be a little bit higher on them than you are. I think that this
You're talking to me, though. Like, this is sort of my default. My default state is slight pessimism.
Well, you are the – I don't know if you've listened to any of these podcasts, but you are the second person to go under of anybody who has done this. So it seems like optimism is kind of the default. So congratulations on going under. You are it was good to hear. I think they're actually going to be a little better. I would say 47, and I think they could even get up to like 53, 54.
I think that's their ceiling. Context is everything. The East, you know, I think there's a bunch of teams that I'd sort of put very close to each other in terms of what I think they will do and can do. And I think the Raptors are right in the middle of that group. And there's definitely a scenario if Carroll is, you know, really studies the ship defensively. And Jonas,
he's looked awesome in the preseason.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think he really makes sense on this team. And, you know, for me, it always comes back to Jonas Valanciunas. Like, they use the high lottery pick on this guy. They just put $64 million into him. And not that stuff matters, because once you've done it, he should just be another player. But they've always, you know, Lowry and DeRozan just aren't great enough players where they don't need that extra guy to sort of become a top 10 player at his position. And I don't think we can say that about Jonas Valanciunas yet. And we're going to need to for this team to sort of fulfill what the front office would like for them.
It's really fascinating to try and project these guys, because as bad as you would say that Lou Williams and Grievous Vasquez were on the perimeter, those guys were awesome offensively last year.
Well, and
especially
like Lou Williams,
early after.
Yeah, Lou was great. Like, I know there's a sort of blaming situation going on where they didn't pass and they didn't play defense, and hey, Lou Williams didn't pass or play defense, so it's Lou's fault that they played like that. You know, nobody told them to start mimicking him. Like they, and I realize it's a team sport, so if one guy's holding the ball, it makes it hard, it's hard for the ball to move, but he was really productive in his role, and that is hard to make up for, and they're going to try and do it a different way this year, and it should be a more aesthetically pleasing way, but it's a risk to say, I think it's sort of faulty reasoning to say they will definitely be better because they are playing this, you know, slightly more in style type of basketball, in vogue type of basketball, because they were sort of unconventional compared to the rest of the league last year, but for a good half of the season, it really worked well, especially offensively.
Yeah, I think the defense on the second unit is going to be so much improved this year. I think Biombo is really underrated defensively.
Yeah, I really like that pickup, like just good value.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only downside for them is that he's got a player option after this year, and I fully expect him to exercise that and get a much bigger contract after this year. Yeah, and Valanciunas, I think they just need to go to him more, too, in the post, because he really, really is difficult to stop in the post.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the top five best post-up centers in the league.
But again, it comes down to passing. Like, how many guys can make that entry? And as you know, entry passes are just more difficult to throw in today's NBA with more, you know, savvy guards and ball-hawking wings lurking around there. But yeah, if he can consistently get position and they can get him the ball, then, you know, I don't mean to sound down on Jonas Valanciunas. Like he has so many valuable skills, that we just don't see that often in this league. But you know, the memory of how they went out against Washington and some of their star's flaws still sort of lingers. And they've definitely changed the formulas this year, so it could sort of mitigate those with a bit more of a cohesive approach.
Yeah, most of the guys on this team, except for Lowry, just and with the way he has looked, maybe you can say that he might even be better than he was in the aggregate last year when you consider that terrible second half of the year. Most of the guys on this team who are left should improve. You know, whether it's Valanciunas, these guys are all in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And DeRozan even is young enough to improve. He had kind of an injury plague.
Yeah, he should be better than last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
But then you say, all right, they did lose a bunch of guys. They didn't, but they have Carroll now, too. I think that you can argue that Carroll is better than anybody that they lost. So I don't know. I feel like we don't know how all the pieces are going to fit together yet for this team, and the front court defense does worry me, but I think there is definitely a very realistic way that this team can surprise some people this year, and it wouldn't shock me at all to see them as the number two seed and then to, of course, flame out in the playoffs because they don't have enough experience or whatever. But during the regular season, they have a lot of depth, too. I think that they could be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Pierce is in the left now, so they don't have to worry about that. That's big. But again, they basically traded offense for defense this offseason. You know, I'm being overly simplistic, but that's more or less what it comes down to. They're hoping that the players they did add will more willingly move the ball than some of them they lost. I think Amir Johnson is a tough guy to replace because even in his sort of broken down state, he covered for a lot of things for this team. So, you know, I think the second unit is a lot better defensively. They're going to struggle to score, I think. Dwayne Casey really favored a sort of 5-5 approach last year, although that changed as the season went on. I don't think he'll be able to do that again. And the front court situation at the quote unquote power forward spot is just confusing right now. It's hard to it's hard to say what exactly is going to transpire there. And I'm a believer in parts of all of the potential players' games, but I'm not sure there's any one guy who's going to be able to just grab it and run with it. And I think that's something they might be looking at all year long.
Yeah, and there are a lot of moving parts on this team. It's going to be a challenge for a coaching staff that I think has had some good moments, but then, you know, I think has probably, frankly, been outcoached in the playoffs the last couple of years. Would you agree with that?
I didn't really think it came down to coaching last year, or even the year before that, but it was definitely slow at some point to adapt.
You think it was just they just didn't have the talent to stop Joe Johnson in that Nets series 2 years ago?
Yeah, like they tried a bit of everything, you know, like Landry Fields got into a game or two, and and Grievous last game played him, and Patrick Patterson was on him at times. And that's Carroll, right? Like that's to quote Paul Pierce, that's why they brought him here.
All right, so last question for you before I let you go. What grade would you give to the Masai Ujiri regime since he came in? So he came in before the summer of 2013 up until now. How do you think they have performed?
B-, maybe. He really has delivered on the promise to stock this team with young players at the back of the roster. They haven't turned anybody into a player yet, so that's sort of like a need to be, you know, we'll have to revisit that in at least a year, if not longer. But I do like that approach, and I like investing in the D-League. They have a new practice facility, which I don't get that excited about, but they seem to be excited about. they have snazzy new uniforms.
I like those uniforms, by the way. Like that like kind of arch to the font.
I find them...
On the front, I think it's awesome, but
I find them kind of boring. I don't hate them. I like them more than the last ones, but I'm not all in or anything. But they haven't worn the black and gold, as Masai said to me the other day. So look out for that. I don't think you've given out like a terrible contract. I would be skeptical of the Corey Joseph contract, but there's still plus 2 first-round draft picks in the future. They have all of their first-round picks.
The Bargnani trade, getting a first-round pick.
Yeah, like that. He started at an A and basically has been more or less shredding, not doing anything disastrous, but not doing anything great after that. The Rudy Gay trade, you know, worked out fine, but the only piece they still have left for that from that is Patterson. And, you know, the added flexibility of not having Rudy Gay along, which is around, which is obviously a thing. I'm still waiting for him to sort of make a bigger imprint on the core. I'm not sure I would have thought when he started that Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Dwayne Casey would all still be here going into his third full year. They are. We all know Kyle Lowry almost wasn't. He almost left right after Rudy Gay, and then magic happened. The hope is that they don't have to do anything to the core. They have that 50-plus win season, and this team fits better. I think because so much of what Masai Ujiri believes in is youth and length, and so much of that is yet to play out on the big roster, on the Raptors roster, I give them a B-, which is basically more of a we'll wait a few years down the road. I think one way or the other, this season is going to really inform what comes next in a way that hasn't necessarily been the case beforehand, if that makes sense. This season's going to be a pivotal turning point, whether you double down on the three guys I mentioned, DeRozan, Lowry, and Casey.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I would actually be much more positive. I would say B+ A-. I thought that some of the contracts he's done, Lowry is on a very favorable contract now.
Yeah, for sure. That was a good, I mean, he has a player option too, but that's a fine contract.
Patterson may be a below average starting forward, but $6 million a year for him in this new environment is excellent. The Bargnani trade, getting that unprotected was an absolute thing. You know, a guy who was a total negative asset, and he got what's probably going to end up being like the number 10 pick in this year's draft. That was unbelievable.
Are we giving him credit, though, for the Knicks being the Knicks at that time?
Well, I mean, everyone else in the league could have done the same thing, right?
Yeah, it did happen, and he did make the trade. And yeah, like, it's just, it's so much of it is unintended, or you would have thought that they were going to blow it up, right? Like, you would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, that the Rudy Gay trade was the beginning of
it. Was going to follow Rudy Gay, and that they would have kept on trying to amass picks. And whether it was Andrew Wiggins coming home or whatever, this was a team that was going to go that route. And they were probably, you know, a loss in Dallas or Oklahoma City in December 2013 away from that happening. And so I think that's sort of why I'm more hesitant, because I'm not sure we've really seen him fully inject his personality and his desires and his vision on the team. It's coming along, but it's coming along more slowly than it might have otherwise. And I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
no, I completely understand that. And obviously you have to make an allowance for the fact that there were potentially some unintended consequences with the Rudy Gay trade, but I thought that they did a nice job of pivoting off of that to keep this tour together, but not sign any bad contracts and be totally locked in. I thought they did well there. And also, I mean, if you asked when he came in, if you asked a Raptors fan, hey, we can win 48 games in 2013-14, we're going to win 49 games the next year, they would have said, hell yes, where do I sign up? You know, because this team looked like it wasn't going anywhere at that point.
But how quickly they surged when they started playing an unattractive style of losing last year. But that's how fandom works. I'm the same way.
Yeah, and it's not that bad of a purge. It's not that bad of a purge. They still have like their three really kind of core pieces in DeRozan, Lowry, and Valanciunas that you would have looked at as being part of what they're trying to do long term, at least in the last couple of years. So.
Yeah, they're like, and I think the key thing is what you mentioned.
And they got Lou Williams for nothing too. Let's not forget that. That was pretty good.
And Bebe and Bebe's locker room antics, Lucas Nogueira, I should say. Although he's pledged to be more serious this year, which is a real emotional bummer for me. But I think the key thing is what you mentioned. He's not locked in on anything. None of the contracts are disastrous, as you pointed out. So it's easy, whatever way, if he wants to do something declarative and more major than he's done, it should not be that difficult. But how big of a weapon that flexibility is in a league where almost everybody is going to have room soon, we'll see.
All right, well, so I'll let you go here. Was there anything else that you kind of have been monitoring or thoughts you have about the team that we didn't get to?
Good question. I think we talked about Bruno, and I think that's, it's so fascinating to me. I could go on and on about it. It's only the 20th pick, and they admitted it was the time to take a risk, but still a first-round pick. We all know how seriously first-round picks are treated as assets in the league, and they drafted this guy that nobody basically had heard of. Like, in the last 5 years, since all, you know, everybody became a draft genius, when has that happened another time?
Yeah.
And I find the development plan with him endlessly interesting. And again, it's a thing that you can't judge, at least after next season, fully. You can't even begin to judge it. But it's a huge thing for them. And I think it's something we're going to be, and it was, they sold it as not a big risk, but I think it wasn't nothing. And
yeah.
I think a lot of what they can do going forward is going to be how they turn these picks, the players they picked with these selections into actual assets. Because you can trade a first round pick for something, but you can't necessarily trade somebody you don't develop for something.
It's driving the new car off the lot, right?
Yeah.
It loses its value unless all of a sudden, like, they have a great rookie year. It's like, you know, what can you trade him for? I mean, well, so what's your gut feeling? You think Caboclo becomes a player now? I mean, I'm sure you've seen him in summer league a little bit, you know, just kind of talking to people around the organization. Yeah. You think he becomes something?
Not there yet. He's not close to being there yet. He just has to play a lot more basketball until he can say. And that's it's just a huge curve to overcome. But, you know, he's got the arms that go on forever, and he's got a reasonable shooting stroke that looks good. So, you know, I don't think it's impossible that by the end of next season he's sort of a passable 3-and-D guy, and then maybe more after. But I don't know if I'd bet a ton on that.
I wish he had a little more bounce. That's kind of the one thing that sticks out to me. And he also is pretty passive. I mean, even when he's on the floor in preseason games with, you know, nobody else really good with him, or in summer league, he pretty much just stands in the corner and you just forget that he's out there, you know, and he's not making the kind of wingspan plays, athleticism plays that you'd like to see from a guy who in theory has these physical tools. So I think he could be a 3-and-D guy. Maybe he turns into a stretch four, but he's got to get that, you know, mentality to really just be a lot scrappier and make more hustle plays than he does. You know, you don't see the type of energy plays from him that you would love to see.
And for that,
I think he has a long way to go. And I don't believe in much of in his ceiling as someone who's really going to be ever creating a lot with the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if you get a rotation player with the 20th pick, ultimately, you got to feel happy about that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why they got their D-League team, right? Like, they sent him down to Fort Wayne last year, and they couldn't find him regular minutes, and now he's probably playing 30 minutes a night, 35 minutes a night there. So, you know, for a player who didn't have a huge track record of playing before, it's a great thing, and it's the best route to making something of that asset. So they're trying, for sure.
Yeah. But, we will be watching the 905s very closely this year, or whatever the term du jour ends up being for them.
Yeah, it's what a horrible name.
All right, on that note, I'll let you go. Where can we follow you on Twitter, and any kind of longer work you want to plug?
I mean, the preview, I'm writing a few pieces for our preview, as you can just was it in our conversation or on this podcast? I don't remember now, but baseball's happening. So, no, it has been not the biggest market for Raptors preseason Raptors so far. But season starts.
Right, we'll root for the Blue Jays to lose then.
No, so don't do that. It's, it's, you know, mid-fall in Canada. We need something. And it sure as hell isn't going to be the Leafs, and it's not going to be the Raptors for, you know, at least you can't fully buy in for another few months. Anyway, to answer your question, I'm going to have a few preview pieces coming out for the season to start. My podcast with Holly McKenzie, The Toast Up, should be right around. I think we're hoping to record the first one of the season on Monday. You can subscribe for that on iTunes. I'm at ecorine on Twitter. I tweet far too much.
If these people follow me on Twitter, so there's no such thing
as tweeting. But I really bring the personal inanity as opposed to just the basketball inanity. Not to say you're inane, but, you know, I wish I could shut up sometimes. But there we are.
All right. Well, now that you've given me such a good plug, you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan. NBA. Also, my Facebook page, Nate Duncan NBA, is a good place to keep up with my writing. If you'd like to support the podcast, our generous sponsors, DraftKings and SeatGeek, you can use the CapSpace code, all one word, with them, and hopefully that will encourage them to keep sponsoring the show. And also, you can give us an iTunes rating or ranking. That is always really appreciated as well, or just simply tell a friend if you enjoy the show. So for Eric, thanks so much for coming on. I'm Nate. We will talk to you all next time.